You can't even breathe. You don't know how to breathe because you've never been allowed to breathe.
Yes.
So, like, you literally have to learn how to breathe. And I mean that literally. You are
Yes.
holding your breath constantly when you are in high control environments. That trauma rewires your heart rhythm. It rewires, it lives inside of your body. And so your body has to learn to acclimate to not being in danger all the time. And it takes a really long time to learn how to actually feel safe inside of your own body.
Welcome to the Audacious Living Podcast, hosted by my man, Audley Stevenson, the Odd Man.
Greetings and salutations. Welcome to the Audacious Living Podcast, where our goal continues to be to inspire our listeners to live their best audacious lives ever. Totally thrilled that you're here with us, and thank you for taking the time as we dive into deep, insightful conversations that inspire growth and transformation. Now, last year, my eldest daughter, for the very first time, took up gardening. Now, when she started, it was late in the year, and she did have some success and grew a few things. I know she wasn't totally satisfied and wanted this year to be even better. So she started early and is already seeing some positive results. You know, in the same way a seed needs nurturing and care to grow a strong and vibrant plant, our journey towards living audaciously requires attention, intention, and courage. Today's episode is a testament of resilience and the power of the human spirit as we hear from a remarkable individual who's overcome immense challenges to carve out her path of empowerment and growth. Our guest today is Shayna Francesca. She's a survivor of an abusive past and a former member of an evangelical Christian cult. Through her journey of healing and self-discovery, Shayna has emerged as a beacon of strength and resilience, embodying the values of curiosity, respect, and accountability in her everyday life. Her story is deeply relevant to this episode as she shares valuable insights on the importance of finding joy in the midst of adversity, building trust in oneself as well as others, and cultivating a sense of purpose and connection in a world that can often feel very, very overwhelming. It truly is a delightful conversation that I'm certain that you'll all enjoy. So without any further ado, here's my chat with Shayna. Hey, Shayna, thank you for joining me today here on the Audacious Living Podcast. It's a pleasure to spend some time with you like this. So thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no, this is I'm always appreciative of individuals spending the time like this and engaging in these sort of really fruitful and healthy conversations. But I think for me the biggest takeaway, the biggest plus rather, is that helping individuals live that best audacious life that we talk about here often, and that pathway to get there, it's going to be different for everyone. It's going to have its own twists and its turns and its bends and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But it's still that journey. And so, and I think for you, you also, when we talk about things like adversity and the challenges of life and the things that come in our way, you've got your own story, which we'll absolutely love to get into, because I think I've always said that there's great, great value when others can sort of hear and understand the journey and lessons of others. And so maybe on that note, as a starting point, we'll get you to share a little bit about your story.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was born into an abusive household and raised inside of an evangelical Christian cult. And so I experienced oppression of the soul from the time I was about 3, 4, is when I became cognitively aware of it, right? And recognized that I was not safe to be myself. I was not, being curious was dangerous. Trying to even consider who I might be in the world was something that I shouldn't do in that space, because I would, if I revealed who I truly am, would be in danger. or who I wanted to be. And so I, you know, created lots of self-protection and hid myself away, right? My who I was or who I wanted to be existed mostly in my head. It did not exist in my physical form, you know, moving through the world. And when my parents joined the cult, I was 5 when I started going to the school, and then they joined the church a few years later. You know, it compounded, because then every aspect of my life, there was no area of my life where I was not experiencing a high control environment. So it was high control inside of my home, and it was high control religious environment outside of, right? And so I understood fundamentally from a very young age what oppressive leadership does, how it kills the soul,
right?
How it is not, it does not foster life, it is death, right? When you live inside of those sorts of environments, they require homogeneity. They require you to show up, everyone to show up as they require, which is stripped of your humanity, stripped of your uniqueness, stripped of that which you have uniquely to offer the world, of your perspective, and require you to take on their lens of the world and operate
Right.
their
Yes.
lens,
Right.
which is death, not life, right? And so it's no wonder that growing up in that environment, which I finally left at 26, left both the home I grew up in and the cult at the same time,
Right.
that only a couple of years later, I would kind of be able to finally breathe. Because when you first leave those environments, you can't even breathe. You don't know how to breathe because you've never been allowed to breathe.
Yes.
So like, you literally have to learn how to breathe. And I mean that literally. You are holding your breath constantly when you are in high control environments. That trauma rewires your heart rhythm. It lives inside of your body. And so your body has to learn to acclimate to not being in danger all the time. And it takes a really long time to learn how to actually feel safe inside of your own body. And so it took me like 3 years to like kind of settle down. And then at 29, I started what is now more than a decade's worth of research into how do I become human? What is it
Right.
to be human? What does it mean to be human? And the place that I've gotten to is the recognition that we as human beings are nature. We are a part of nature. We are meant to live in reciprocity with the entire living world. We are not in charge of it, but a part of it, right? And when we recognize that, we start to see the value in all life, because we start to recognize that we are dependent on all the life around us. Without it, we wouldn't exist, right? And so there starts to be a respect level and an accountability level and a curiosity, which is those three things are the foundation of my work, that you see as being necessary for being human and moving through the world in a humane and ethical way.
It almost sounds like, and so thank you for sharing that. It almost sounds like, in some respects, like you began living at 29, like
For sure.
right? Like, up until that
Yeah.
point, you weren't
I hadn't
fully
been
living
living.
your fullest. You were just right.
I was dying. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Was the what was what was or did there exist a trigger or spark, an impetus that made you want to make that transition? You said you identified in an early age, what you're in. But in terms of getting, like, so it's one thing to have that awareness of what it is. Next thing is to take that step and do something about it.
Yeah.
That do something about it thing, or was something that happened to make that happen, or what did
Yeah.
that look like?
There's a series of things. So at the end, trigger warning for anybody listening, I'm going to talk about some sensitive things. So if talking about, sexual abuse, those sorts of things are really triggering to you, just maybe skip ahead a couple of minutes. So at around, I can consciously recognize that probably around the age of 11, 12, my father started grooming me. And for anybody who doesn't understand what that means, that is behavior from a pedophile trying to control a child or a person,
right?
To they're testing how much you're going to trust them and keep their secrets. And so he started grooming me around that time, forced me to take a chastity pledge in front of my 2,000 person church, which felt really disingenuous for me because I had been sexually assaulted at 3, had been raped at 3. And so I knew that based on the church's definition of purity, I did not fit that definition, which
Right.
is kind of a horrifying thing for a child to think of themselves, but I did. And so I was being forced to say something in front of a whole group of people that made me deeply uncomfortable, was really triggering for me, but I was forced to do it anyway.
And
And
sorry, how old were you at this point?
12.
Wow, 12.
12. And so my father forced me to do this thing, and it felt like it was all about him and had nothing to do with me. I was right. 3 years later, my father sexually assaulted me. He did not succeed in raping me. I ran away, but the damage was done. You know, he had touched me inappropriately, and, you know, in ways that a father should never even consider touching their child, or any person should consider touching a child,
Right. No.
or anyone without permission. And so, you know, there was these fractures that were happening, right? And I began to recognize that the person who told me that I had to show up in the world a specific way refused to show up in that way. So they were using these rules they had created as a way of controlling me, while refusing to exercise self-control. And so there was nothing safe about this person. There was this fracture of whatever reality he was trying to create inside of me. I no longer bought into it. And at that point, I became determined to no longer be under his control. However, there was a problem with that. I was a child, I was 15. I was inside of a cult. I had no support system outside of it because of having an abusive father. He had alienated us from our entire extended family. So there was no close relationships there. I didn't feel safe. I didn't even know my extended family well enough to call them or say, I need to get out of this situation and I don't know how and I need help. I had no friends or family outside of, right? And I had three younger siblings. The youngest at the time was one.
Wow.
It was one. And so I knew if I left, they were still there. And there was this creator on TikTok that put it so beautifully the other day. It becomes dangerous to systems of oppression when death becomes an option for those who are oppressed.
Yeah.
Right. And so when I was living in that abusive environment, when death became an option, right, because I didn't care whether I lived or died anymore, because if that was living, I didn't want it.
Right.
Now I could speak truth to power in a way that it didn't matter what he threatened me with. It didn't matter what violence was brought against my body. I didn't care anymore because he had taken everything I cared about and destroyed it, right? Or could even consider. So at that
And again,
point,
up to that point, you weren't living anyways, right? You didn't feel like you were living to begin with.
No. So I just became like a fire-breathing dragon. I was willing to burn it all down.
Right.
And I was fighting to burn it all down. And so I was emboldened when I was 3 years later to tell my mother what my father had done. I didn't tell anyone for 3 years. And I told her the night he tried to strangle her to death. And I stood up to him, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was in that moment that he started to realize that now there was more people willing to stand up against him, that I was willing to physically stand up against him and stop him. And so it became a very different thing. And that I was capable of not, he could hurt me, but I was capable of stopping him at least temporarily, right? And people joining me and fighting against him. And so at that point, I know he started to seek attention from other women outside of his relationship with my mother, and eventually left when I was 24. And so there was these like series of things that happened. And so from the age of 25 to 26, I was living most of the time with my grandfather, who was dying from cancer, my mom's dad. And then at 26, when he passed away, I just left. I never went back. Left the cult, left all of it, because I had no one forcing me to stay in. So it was these kinds of series of things that happened, but it all started with when death became an option.
Yep, and that's I think you eloquently put it. Like, when it gets to that point, that's when you know, realize how bad things are.
Yeah.
Were there any sort of support on your way out, or was this just all a solo effort? Like, You're in
solo
this
effort.
cult, you're in this family, you're in this household that's
Yeah.
not supportive of you or keeping you safe, right? Like you think of some things that naturally, when you think of certain places that are supposed to be safe, right?
Yeah.
Your home is supposed to be safe. Even the
Yeah.
church is supposed to be safe. Your family is
Yeah.
supposed to be safe, and you're not getting that anywhere. And so
Yeah.
to know that you had to sort of do all this to get out of it all by yourself,
Like
that's
I said, I mean,
tremendous.
yeah, it is, but at some point in time you realize if I don't leave,
Yep.
there will be nothing of me left. I will be obliterated and I won't even know how to find myself. And at that time I had a job, I had graduated college, you know, I had my own income. It wasn't great, because I didn't know my worth or value. And that's the other thing, is that when you grow up in those environments, those abusive environments, your parents or whoever your abuser is priming you to be abused by
Right.
other people for the rest of your life.
Yeah. It's
Because you don't know
setting you
your
on a
worth or your
path.
value.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's setting you on a
Yeah.
path that really leads to like poverty, destruction, right? And we know that poverty is destruction. It destroys people's lives.
Yeah.
So like I didn't know how to ask for my value or my worth. I was, you know, the second salesperson in the company. I brought in $1.6 million and made $375,000 worth of profit for that company, and I made $50,000 that year, including commission,
Right.
right? I was making nothing. I was
Yeah.
making nothing, right? And I didn't know how to ask for my worth, and I tried, but I didn't do it so very confidently. And so like there was a lot of things that I had to work through. When you leave those environments, you have no idea really how embedded it is in every way that you show up in the world, and how really harmful people can see it and will harm you because they can see that you've already been primed. Yeah.
So let's jump into the other side of this, right?
Yeah.
Because there's another side of the story.
For sure.
I would assume that up until that point, you weren't living with joy and hope and all the wonderful things that come with this new way of life for you. How long did it take for you to actually experience that joy and excitement of life? Because I don't think it happened right away, right? I don't
No,
think
it
it.
happens slowly. It
Yeah.
happens slowly. It's not like all of a sudden one day, so a flip, a switch is flipped and now you're suddenly joyful. You start to find joy in the little moments. And then you start to wonder what brought you that joy. And you start to realize you could be present for the first moment in your life because you weren't fearing that someone was going to harm you, right? And then you start to realize that it's presence, that it's actually joy. And that's a Buddhist thing, actually. Buddhism, you know, really talks about joy happening in being present in the moment and not trying to make the moment anything other than it is, just accepting it as it is. And you cannot do that when you're fighting for your life, right? So, you know, there starts to be these moments where I would forget that, you know, that my body would forget, right? Because your body, complex PTSD is not a rational thing. It is essentially how it's explained to me that made the most sense. It is pain and trauma that has happened to your body that has not been chronologically stored. So your body is still experiencing it,
Yes.
it as if it's present, not past, right? And so there was times, I guess, that I had been able to sort through enough of my trauma through therapy and coaching to finally be able to be present and be with people I knew I was safe with. And honestly, I'm going to say that the joy happened once I started building and found community.
Got you.
Yeah, like I had to build new community for myself. For me, I don't know that true joy really happens in like if we're lonely or feel alone in this world. I don't know that joy can really happen in that moment. I think we really get to experience the world and understand who we might be and how we might show up and be safe with a community of people around us, even if it's just two or three people.
Being able to develop trust in people and others, I would imagine that wasn't an easy thing for you to
No.
start to be able to do. What talk about what that is like to be able to, I was gonna say to learn how to trust, but I don't know if did you ever trust?
Yeah. But you do have to learn. And the thing that you actually have to learn more than how to trust is how to listen to your intuition again. Because when you live in an abusive situation or are in an abusive situation, however it shows up in your life, you are taught not to trust your own intuition. You are taught not to trust yourself. And so then you also don't know how to trust other people. And so the beginning of healing that was not, because there's no such thing as a fully trustworthy human. People will always let you down, but they'll always surprise you with how amazing they are too, right? So like, but you could learn how to move through the world and recognize who what people in your life are actually committed to being accountable and respecting you and curious about who you are and how you want to show up in the world. You learn that through your intuition. And so fostering my intuition and bringing it back to a place of prominence back in my life was a big part of my healing.
I definitely can see that. So being a challenge, I'll say, as you're sort of going through this pathway, and again, too, especially if you just sort of newly freed yourself, let's say, even still trusting, because you're now on a new, like this is unsure footing, right? Like yes, you came out of what you were. And I like to think it was a confident, bold step out of that, but you're still sort of new ground, you're to new territory, and you're sort of, you've got to be able to trust that, I'll put
It
one foot in
wasn't,
front of
I'm going to
me.
say it wasn't a confident, bold step out. I think it took courage, but there was a hell of a lot of fear, right? And I've rarely, I mean, I don't think there is such thing as courage without fear. And so, like, that's the thing, you know, I was lucky because most people can't leave their abuser. Most people do not understand that you are most in danger of being murdered, of being unalived when you leave the person who is abusing you. And when it comes to a professional situation, you're in danger of being blackballed. You're in danger of your entire financial future being taken from you and having to rebuild that, which is not safe in the world we live in because you have to pay to live, right? That here in America, human beings are the only beings that have to pay to for their survival. And so, you know, there's a lot at stake there. So, you know, trying to build community around yourself, however you can, you know, trusting your intuition and trying to build community, those are the things that are going to help you get out of those situations and have a safe place to land, to have mutual aid built into, you know, your ability to leave.
So what did your plan look like? As your
Find a new
smile,
place to
so
live. Yeah. Find a new place to live and you know, then find a new job because I knew the job I was at that was exploiting me. I didn't have that language back then, but I knew I was being mistreated. I knew I was doing the job of three people, making, you know, $45,000 a year plus commission. I wasn't valued. I was constantly being gaslit. And I was like, you know what, I can't do this anymore. So, you know, then I started building confidence. You know, found a new job at 29. I found a new job. Asked for more money. Was making $15,000 more a year as a base salary plus commission. You know, so that was a bold step, right? But I that was a confident step. That was a courageous step for me. So, you know, it just built up. You know, it just built on top of each other, but it definitely wasn't bold or create. It wasn't bold at first or confident. Yeah.
And that's certainly real and authentic, and I think people will appreciate hearing that, right? That
Yeah.
as much as we talk about, so I've got to get out of this situation, it's still there's some trepidation, there's some fear, there's some
Yeah.
concern, there's some
And
worry.
there's, and it's, there should be. There
Right.
should be. There should be, right? And like that is your intuition telling you to be careful, telling you that, you know, you don't have the support you should have to be able to, because you shouldn't have to be in that situation to begin with, right? Like, you know, it, yeah, you know, your intuition is telling you to be careful, but, you know, you can take the steps. I guess the thing is, you can take the steps. You can find the support somehow, some way to be able to leave that situation. You just have to know who to ask and how, and that's going to take time.
How long did it take you to start experiencing the joy of life?
I mean, at first, just leaving, when I first moved out of, the house I grew up in, that was a good day. I mean, I moved into a bedroom that barely could fit my bed and my dresser and my things. I didn't care. It cost me, and this was 14 years ago, or 13 years ago. It cost me, or it was costing me $350 a month to rent a room with two firefighters who I walked into this house and I was like, I'm gonna have to do a good bit of reorganization here because this is crazy. And they were like, never home. So I kind of had run of the place,
Gotcha.
which just was like, and then I started, I became a semi-professional salsa dancer, and
Okay.
dance has always been a part of my life. I've always been on the stage, dancing, performing, singing, but it never like that. I'd never been allowed to move my body and move my hips, right? Because that was like a sin. I was Some man was going to hurt me, and it was going to be my fault if I dared move my hips. And there's so much stress that women hold within their hips, and there's so many dance practices from cultures around the world that specifically use the hips in dancing because they know how critical it is for, especially, when we're going through difficult emotions, to move them through our hips. And so I, no matter what was happening in my life, I could hit that dance floor and I could move emotions through and out of my body. So there was a lot of things that I did to support myself that really helped to me to find joy in everyday things and to feel safe to be myself.
I do like that, the idea of finding the things that bring you joy. But not
Yeah.
only just finding them, but then also finding
Reclaiming them.
ways to
Yeah.
stay as close to them as possible.
Yeah.
And I think that is a practice that anyone can use, regardless of you're coming out of a situation. This is not just here's what you
It's
do
for
with this,
everyone
right?
because we all have trauma. It doesn't, we live in a society that forces us to have to prove our worth and our value every day. That's fundamentally inhumane, right? So we all have trauma inside of that system, whether you see it that way or not,
No, that's a good
right?
point. Yeah.
And so finding the things that bring us joy, that help us to physically move, difficult emotions and things through our bodies and regulate ourselves is really, really important. And that's why so many indigenous practices are around group dancing, by the way, right? Because they know the value of it. And it also, by the way, I learned this the other day, that the reason why around certain times of the year, Indigenous people would get together and dance is because there is something that would happen in the soil with the mycorrhizal network,
Okay.
basically what connects mushrooms right under the ground,
Okay.
that it would be activated by the vibrations of dancing and would spread that and would spread the nutrients to the plants that they had planted, right? So there's this beautiful connection. Again, we are nature, right? We're meant to live in reciprocity with nature, and we don't even realize the ways that we benefit all of life by continuously interacting with the living world.
I like that. I like that. You sort of fast forward a little bit, but you eventually sort of led your work in the leadership sphere, the leadership realm,
Yeah.
and you're
Yeah.
very intentionality. You talked about that
Yeah.
already, as well as one of sort of your tenets, if you will.
Yeah.
But you also taught you also look at things like curiosity,
Yeah.
respect, accountability. How did you land on these frameworks of things that were important to you, and why you wanted to share them the way you do?
As I, yeah, absolutely. As I studied organizations, as I studied leaders, and I, paid attention to the world around me, I started seeing this pattern of where did healthy relationship, what did healthy relationship look like, and what were these factors that seemed to keep showing up? And over again, it kept coming back to when I distilled it down, right? Because people didn't outright come out and say curiosity, respect, and accountability are the foundations of our business. No, but I would read their values and I'm like, okay, that's about respect. Okay, that's about curiosity. Okay, that's about accountability, right? And they just kept, I kept being able to distill these values within people and these organizations down to those three key things. And they function as an ecosystem, right? You can't, the minute you pull away curiosity, you no longer have relationship. When you've decided who or what something is, that's not a relationship. That's not a relationship at all, because a relationship is reciprocity, is engagement with another being and acceptance of who and what it is. And then
That's
you
right.
get respect, which helps you to, which curiosity is tied in with respect, because curiosity without respect is intrusive, and respect without curiosity is uneducated, right? And so
Oh, I love
when we get
that.
curious, right? I know.
Wait, no, you got to say that again. I love, I honestly, that, I, that, some of that, say that
No.
again. That was awesome.
Yeah, curiosity without respect is intrusive, right? And we can think about microaggressions. We can think about really basic example. If I, as a white woman, go up to a black woman and I touch her hair,
Right.
right? Microaggression. That is curiosity, but without respect. There's no boundaries there. I didn't observe her personal boundaries. I didn't respect that she's an individual who must give me permission.
Yes.
And I shouldn't ever ask to touch her hair either, because that's
Right.
also a boundary violation, right?
Right, 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 right.
Somebody must grant you permission. You don't get to ask for
Correct,
permission, right?
correct.
And so we learn that, right? So curiosity without respect is intrusive, and respect without curiosity is uneducated, right? Because if we haven't come to a situation open to learning, then we can't actually understand what somebody's boundaries are and how to respect them. So those two things must happen together. And then accountability asks us to be continually invested in understanding the impact of our actions on the people and the lives we are impacting, and to be held accountable by them, to be held responsible for that impact by them. And if we're not interested in that, that's abuse and exploitation, right? Because if you continue to be in relationship with someone, and you are doing something that is beneficial to you or beneficial to someone, but harmful to this other person,
Right,
and you
right.
are refusing to alter, to learn more, right? Get curious,
Yep.
to learn how to respect that scenario better, to take responsibility, and you continue to do that harm, you're abusing that
Just
person.
perpetuating it. It's just over and over
Correct.
again. Right.
You're abusing that person, whether or not your actions are beneficial to someone else, right? It's about
Or whether or not you were fully aware of it too, because
intention,
it's right.
right? It,
That's
because we're not responsible for our intentions, we're responsible for our impact, right? And so it's about that. When we, when those three things work together and we stay invested in them, that's when real relationship, real ethical relationship actually comes about. Without those things, there isn't relationship, there's control and there's harm. Because I can love someone, I
Sure.
can truly be interested in someone, and I can do things that harm them, right? Again, back to the example of if I know this beautiful, amazing black woman, and I touch her hair, she might, we might have a relationship, but it
Right.
still doesn't give me right to touch her hair. And if I
That's
keep doing
correct.
it, and other people also, if other people see it,
See
right,
that?
now
Yes.
she doesn't feel safe with me, and now other people feel emboldened to do the same thing,
Yes.
and now she's being harmed, but right, so it starts to perpetuate
That's
harm,
right. That's
right?
right.
So
That's
we
right.
have to
And
take
normalize it
responsibility.
too.
Correct.
Right?
Exactly. Exactly. It normalizes it, which makes it 10 times more harmful.
That's right.
Yeah.
Especially for the person that wants to
Correct.
break out of that, because they're
Yes.
now, it's a form of gaslighting, right? Like essentially
Right.
like I'm the only
Well,
one in
what
the
do you
room that
mean?
sees.
Everybody does
Yeah,
this.
this is
Yeah.
good. Yeah.
Right. It's
Come
fine.
on,
You're
guys, let's go
fine.
touch your hair
I'm
because that's
just
how we do
touching your
it.
hair. Great.
Yeah.
I'm just touching your hair.
What is wrong with you? What's the big deal? What are you getting
Right.
worked
It's
up
not a
about?
big, it's just hair.
Yeah.
Right? So like it just it is so deeply harmful and so
Right.
embedded in our society,
Yes.
that in those moments when someone says you're harming me, we do not get an opinion about that. The only thing that we are responsible for doing is listening, getting curious, listening to them, respecting them, and then no longer doing that harm. That's it. And if we are not interested in respecting them and no longer doing that harm, then we must remove ourselves from their life. or they will remove themselves from our life, right?
That's right.
Like
That's
if
right.
they can,
That's
if
right.
they're safe
Yes.
to,
That's
right?
right. If and I would say, if we care about that relationship or care about that
Right.
individual, if because if we don't care, then who cares how they feel? It doesn't matter.
Correct. If you do not caring is exemplified by your lack of desire to be accountable. Right. So like as a kid, I didn't have any of this language, but I used to
Right.
tell my father all the time, you don't actually care about me because you hurt me all the time and you don't
Right.
care. You say that it's for my own good, yet I'm suffering.
Yes.
Right. And so he would be like, no, this is because I love you. No, this is not what love looks
This is
like
not
because you're
love.
not unwilling to take accountability for the harm you're doing to me. Right. I didn't have that language then, but I do now. And so really my work always kind of takes me back to the things that I see happening in the world, because as I deconstructed growing up in those environments, I started to see the ways in which those same behaviors showed up, like from these extreme environments, they showed up, they had reflections in our society at large. They were normalized in certain ways, right? That cult I grew up in existed and was able to thrive the way that it did because it was the natural end result of ideas that already existed in our society. They just took them to a little bit further extreme. Yeah.
Wow. I no, that's profound. Again, the curiosity and respect and how they're intertwined with one another.
Yeah.
I do appreciate that. But you still zeroed right in on leadership. Like, so
Yeah.
and understand
Because
that you're
who we
talking
are as
about,
people, yeah. Because who we are as people is who we are as a leader.
that's right.
And you have to be invested in those things as a leader, in curiosity, respect, and accountability as a leader. Otherwise, you're not a leader, you're a dictator.
That's right.
You might not call yourself that, but you are.
And the piece that I do like around that is being very intentional with our actions, being very clear on what we're doing, why we're doing it, how we're doing it. Because there is an awareness part of this as well that's also quite important, right?
And that's the thing. I think a lot of there's some people, especially depending where you are in the hierarchy of privilege in this country, who aren't required to be aware.
Right.
They're not required to be self-aware,
Right.
right? And so getting comfortable with these concepts is something that's going to take time for people who haven't had to be accountable for their actions throughout their life. Not th they've been overly they've had to be very accountable in some ways, especially for like for men. Let's use that example. A lot of times men have had to be accountable to show up as masculine, whatever the heck that even means. It's an ever-changing idea that men constantly have to align themselves with, strip themselves of their humanity, objectify themselves in order to show up as quote unquote masculine. So they've been overly accountable in the way they show up as quote unquote masculine, but not necessarily accountable really at all in other parts of their life, right? And so in those parts of their life where they're not used to accountability, it's going to be very uncomfortable to learn to be accountable in those areas, which is why I do the work that I do, because then we can learn to discuss what does it look like to show up and be accountable in those areas. What does it look like to fumble through and mess up and take accountability? Like what does all of that mean? Because it's a messy process, learning how to be human, right? And this is why I just started writing my book, and the title is How I Became Human. Learning how to become human is a messy process. Living is a messy process. And it's, I think too many of us have bought into the idea that it's supposed to be comfortable. However, that comfort has come at the cost of other people. Right? Other people's lives, other people's comfort, other people's thriving. And so, when we sit down and we can really be present with that, we can recognize that discomfort is just a part of being, it's just a part of living. And learning how to process and learning how to experience that in community, right? Because we're not meant to experience it by ourselves. That's when it becomes trauma. When we're working through things together with a community of support, it becomes a very different thing than us hyper individualizing and trying to solve our problems by ourselves.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Man, I love it. I love it. Shannon, this has been certainly awesome. I mean, from the beginning of your story and how you're able to transition into this new life where where there's joy and you're able to live authentically. And, and we even touched on that. And maybe let's sort of get into this how authentic living, because I thought that kind of ties the bow on everything as I see it, right?
It
Like you're doing
does.
all these things, and now you're able to live
To
authentically and be who you truly are, which I'll tell you has been is a big theme on this podcast, because if you can be who you're meant to be and show up in the world as an individual, you can live this audacious life. And so, I'd just love to get your thoughts on sort of authentic living and how important that is to us.
I go back to relationship building, right? Because I don't think any of us discovers who we are in a vacuum. I think we discover who we are and we heal and we learn and we grow together in community. And to be able to be in a community with people around you to actually show up in relation requires relationship reciprocity, right? It requires us to be invested. It requires curiosity, respect, and accountability. That's how we show up in relationship. That's how we build community. That's how we discover who we are and what's possible for ourselves, because other people work as mirrors for us. They help us to see what we don't see. They help us to recognize what might be possible for us that we didn't even see for ourselves, because we've got a lot going on up here. There's a lot going on
We
inside
do.
of our heads, right?
We do.
And so being with other people opens up our perspective about the world. It changes how we see the world and what we see as possible for others and for ourselves, both individually and collectively, right? And so that's a really big part of living an authentic life, is being invested in relationship and building community around ourselves and
Gotcha.
understanding what that means.
No, that's the big one there. And then
What does that mean?
within the leadership sphere, so we've taken all of this in, we've got that understanding. The next natural piece is how we use all these things to positively impact others. Because
Yeah, absolutely.
that's the next logical step in all this. Like you're
I
not a
mean,
leader just so you can, like you don't go into a leadership role just for yourself. It's impossible.
Then you're not a leader.
Right. That's it.
You're a dictator.
Right.
It directly translates. So I talk to people about how to build your personal curiosity, right? How to foster curiosity, because many of us, it was programmed out of us from the time that we were kids, right? Think about
Right.
how many times that you're a kid and someone's like, curiosity killed the cat. And you're like, but I just want to learn. And I don't know why I'm going to die like a cat because I asked a question,
Right,
right?
right,
And
right.
so getting back to a place where we can foster our curiosity and discover things, like things about things we've known about our whole life. Like some of the metaphors I use in my speeches are directly connect, all of them are directly connected to my own curiosity,
Sure.
right? So some of the metaphors and stories I use are about dandelions, about poison ivy, about trees, about mushrooms, about, the galaxy. These are all things that I learned just by getting curious and saying, I just want to learn three new things about dandelions that I didn't know, right? And I go and learn these things, and then I realize how powerful they are as a metaphor and use it in my speeches, right? There's so much for us to learn about the world around us.
Right.
So when we take that, right, and we take that practice of learning three new things about something every day, or even once a week, right? Saturday mornings, you go for a walk, you learn three new things. Then we can apply that to our businesses, right? You can walk the hallways, you can walk between, workstations and offices every day, talk to somebody new within the organization. And you can learn three things about that person, but you can also learn three things about what they think about the business. Maybe they have some ideas that they'd love to implement about processes. Maybe they think a new product could be created, right? And by walking these hallways and connecting with people, that's how Campbell Soup transformed a complete downward slump into the powerhouse that they are today, because the CEO literally talked to a new person every single day and transformed that organization. He recognized that it was going to take a community that all the way, like he had a wealth of wisdom that lived inside of those walls, that worked that building, that worked within that organization every single day. And instead of pretending he had to be the one to fix it, he knew he could pull from the wisdom of thousands of people, and he could create a much better solution with everyone together, right? And so that's when leadership really becomes transformational,
Yes, dynamic.
and profitability soars.
Yeah. And actually, I'm glad you made the point of profitability, because sometimes that that connection isn't always
Oh
made.
no, profitability. I mean, look at what Campbell's Soup has done. I
Right.
mean, they just bought Rouse last year. They're gobbling up.
You've been listening to the Audacious Living Podcast, hosted by Audley Stevenson. If you enjoyed what you heard, be sure to like, subscribe, and share. Until next time, be audacious.
Where I grew up,
Right,
right?
right, right, right.
And so, like, we see the way that these organizations have tapped all kinds of wisdom and diverse wisdom. They didn't just ask one person. They didn't just ask other people in the C-suite. They asked the people on the ground.
Right.
They asked the people on the ground
Yeah, because
what their
they,
thoughts were.
yeah.
Yes. And it transformed their businesses. And people, and I just, like, I want to leave people with this. Citibank did a study that came out in 2020 that let us know that the US economy lost out on $16 trillion because of a lack of diversity.
Okay.
We as leaders must be pulling community from the community around us.
Yes.
And that
Yes.
community must look like the community we serve
Yes.
and the community we're located in.
Yes. Absolutely.
And that is how you get a diverse array of opinions and your profitability soars.
And you become more dynamic as an
Yeah.
organization.
Yeah.
Again, you
Yeah. And
get
you have to
diverse
honor those people.
thinking. I
Yeah.
think as well, the level of creativity just expands
Correct.
in all sorts of
Yes.
ways, because you're not
Correct.
all thinking just one way. You're not all this
Right.
tailor, cookie
Well,
cutter.
yeah. My thing about creativity is, and innovation is, they're about relationship. Right. So when you really think about it, they're about recognizing a relationship between things you previously thought were disparate and you now see as deeply connected. That requires transformation of your relationship with those things, which again goes back to curiosity, respect, and accountability. It
Oh my God.
all funnels back to
It is.
each
That's
other.
the interconnectedness is definitely there, Shayna.
For
Definitely,
sure.
definitely is there. Listen, I've so appreciated this
Yeah,
conversation.
thanks for having me.
No, this has been great, and I really appreciate the insights. And I'm always eager to be able to offer insights, and love to engage in conversations that new insights or new ways of seeing things or
Yeah.
new learnings. And so I think you've definitely done that. Hey, I mean, the conversation around curiosity
And
and
respect,
respect
yeah.
is a great one. So thank you for
Yeah.
that. For listeners that wanted to learn more about you and the work that you do, where can we send them?
My website is a great place to start. It's www.consonate.world. Don't worry about trying to spell it. I'm sure it'll be tagged in the show notes. You can also find me as Shayna Francesca on LinkedIn. You can send me a message there. But I'm going to caution you, if your first message to me is selling me something, I'm going to block you. So be a human being about it and connect with me as a human being. I'm always connecting with people I don't know.
Right.
But the first thing I'm asking people to do is are you open to a coffee or a tea virtually? Let's actually connect as human beings. So if
Sure.
you want to connect with me, that's another great way.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, look, Shayna, thank you so much for this. Again, a great chat. Congratulations
Thank
on
you.
your work. And yeah, keep it going. Keep it going.
Yeah, I am. I am.
All right. Take care. Shayna's journey reminds us that true healing and empowerment stem from within. Embracing curiosity, respecting ourselves and others, and holding ourselves accountable for our actions. By nurturing these values, we can break free from the cycles of abuse and exploitation and step into our authentic power and potential. Certainly, if you're interested in learning more about Shayna and her work, be sure to check out the show notes before. We'll have all the contact details available for you, to you. Certainly, you can reach out to her directly and an opportunity to continue the conversation on how you live a more audacious life. Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Audacious Living Podcast. If you enjoyed today's conversation, please consider liking, sharing, following this podcast to help us reach more listeners. You can also rate us, give us a 5-star rating or leave a comment below. It was really a great way of showing your support and very much appreciated. Certainly stay audacious and keep striving for that best life ever. Until next time, stay safe, be kind, show love to one another, and be audacious.
You've been listening to the Audacious Living Podcast, hosted by